And it was the first time I've ever wanted to listen to music during labor and actually like enjoyed listening to music. It was such a prayerful experience. And I was just like, this is, and I was like, you know what? I don't even need her. I don't want anybody else here. My midwife is coming. Christian is here. Jesus is here. I don't really need anything else. Like,
Holy Wild Birth is a podcast embracing the reclamation of giving birth, rooted in God's original design, undisturbed.
Here, we share homebirth stories highlighting God's presence as the great midwife, as well as conversations about all aspects of a holistic, spirit-led childbearing year. From the perspectives of myself, traditional midwife Lauren Hall of Rooted in Eden Private Contract Association,
and me, holistic doula and birth keeper, Brooke Collier of Sister Birth.
To choose a holy wild birth journey is to consecrate all your decisions unto the Lord.
And to reclaim creation unadulterated by centuries of human attempts to control and improve upon what God has already called good.
Please remember, birth is not a medical event, but a natural process. We are not your care providers, and this should not be taken as medical advice.
Welcome, sisters, to another episode of Holy Wild Birth, and we're bringing you today a birth story for the first time in quite a while, actually. This was recorded a while ago, and I'm finally getting around to dropping it. I have Christina on today, a Catholic mom of three boys, and she shared when she reached out to me about sharing her story on this episode that one of the biggest takeaways that you'll see illustrated in her stories is that she had had this long laundry list of things she wanted for her births, but when she started asking God what he wanted, that's when everything shifted. She says, "I was able to trust and surrender in a new way and received even more than I asked for." And I also loved something she shared that she said, "I truly wish every woman could experience a birth like this one," meaning her third birth, "and get a glimpse of the particular, singular love the Father has for each of us. I'm holding on to that moment of worship when I held my third son in my arms for the first time." So good. So she has a really worshipful, beautiful stance and three wonderful home birth stories in which she goes deeper and deeper with the Lord in each one. I hope you'll grab a cup of coffee and enjoy what's coming up. Hey, Christina.
Hello, Brooke.
Hey. Gosh, I'm so glad you're here.
I am so glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, this is going to be really fun. I'm looking forward to this conversation and have been. So before we jump in, I just wanted to invite you to introduce yourself a little bit to everyone who might be listening.
Well, my name is Christina, and I am, 39, which I can't believe. I have three little boys. Also can't believe that. I'm married to a wonderful man. We've been married for almost 7 years. So my oldest is 5 and a half. My middle is 3, and this little guy is 9 weeks old. So, I live in Austin, Texas, where it's been a very lovely spring this year, much, much cooler than normal. So it's like not even gotten to 90 yet, which is very exciting. Great. I'm planning to homeschool, but we're very unschooly right now. I don't do anything formal with my oldest. We just kind of read books and talk about things and do what I call life school.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to keep it as casual as possible until it doesn't have to be, or until my child wants it to be more formal, basically, which I'm guessing is probably not going to be closer until 7, because boys are just very different from girls, or at least my oldest is very different from how I was as a child. So
yeah,
that's been a real interesting one. My husband and I got married on the later end for my world that I lived in, and still live in. So we got married when I was 33. He was 40. His story is very long and interesting, but I will leave that out and just say that I thought for sure I'd get married at 22 and have like six kids by the time I was 30. That was kind of my plan.
Yeah.
And I also had a lot of unresolved trauma and just a lot of emotional baggage, and was dealing, when I was 22, I was dealing with an eating disorder and anxiety disorder and depression and so many other things. And suffice it to say, I did not get married at 22. I'm very thankful that I did not.
I relate to that so much.
I felt like God had forgotten about me, or that I was just being left out, because so many of my friends got married right out of college. I went to Notre Dame and was part of a very, you know, more conservative circle, I guess. And many of the couples who were dating senior year. And
that's like the Christian subculture thing, isn't it? Like, everyone gets married when they're so young in Christian subculture. So heaven forbid you're 24 and still not married.
Oh my gosh. And the idea was very much like, if we don't get married now, if we don't meet my spouse now, where am I going to meet my spouse? Like, all these awesome people are in the same place, and we all have we're very like-minded. And where am I ever going to meet someone like that again? You know, that was kind of the attitude. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very thankful that God knew me better than I knew myself, knows me better than I know myself. And that I had to wait, because I had a lot of personal work to do, and I needed like a whole decade to do it.
Oh, same, sister.
Yeah. So I think many, many people can relate to that. But I still wasn't happy about it. And I still, you know, got into really unhealthy relationships, and it took me until I was really like 32, right before I met my husband, was kind of like my first really, I'd been to many therapists and been through a lot of different kinds of therapy, but right before I met my husband, it was the most effective experience of therapy I've ever had. I did some EMDR and really got through, got over some stuff that I thought I would never be parted from. And right after that, right after I started doing that kind of therapy, I met my husband, and it was not a coincidence. I know that now, the Lord was just orchestrating it all. I was in the best place. I mean, I've still had a lot of growth to do since then, but I was in the best place of my life for sure when I met my husband that I had been yet. And he was in a similar situation too. So see if my husband. Okay. So we got married when I was 32. So this is 2016. We met January 2016. We were married December 2016. So that's one of the benefits of waiting until you get older, is that you don't need as much time to discern.
That was for me too. Yep.
Yeah. So once we got married, I was very disappointed that we did not have a honeymoon conception, but we got pregnant, I think, the second cycle. And I had been on progesterone supplements for a while for my for PMS issues that I was having. So I'd already seen a NAPRO doctor, which is a natural, they're OBs that are trained in fertility awareness methods and sort of other alternatives to fertility treatments that are more mainstream. I definitely had a major estrogen dominance progesterone deficiency issue, which was sort of addressed by the progesterone, but that's another story. And so I got pregnant with my first, and pregnancy was fairly unremarkable. Found out I was having a boy. Could not believe that, because I always imagined myself having a first girl. I think most women do. And during that pregnancy was when I started to really think about birth for the first time. I had a lot of friends who already had babies, so I knew that there were other ways to birth besides in the hospital. I had friends who had had home births. I had friends who had had birth center births, and I'm so thankful for that. That's another benefit of getting married later, is that other people kind of pave the way for you. And my sister, my youngest sister, who got first in my family, I'm the oldest of four, I have two sisters and a brother. She got married first, and she already had, by the time I was pregnant with my first, she was pregnant with her fourth, and she had only hospital births, and all induced, all medicated, very kind of typical hospital births. And I knew I didn't want that, but like I knew I wanted an unmedicated birth, but I was still iffy about not going hospital route, because I had been scared by our culture and the attitude of birth. I mean, what I was swimming in, my mom was induced with all four of us. I was an emergency C-section, I think because I was induced, because my mom was induced. And, you know, my dad is a physician. He's not an OB, but he is in that world and has a lot of friends who are OBs. And so there's a lot of family friends who are in that world. And when I one time told my dad, this was way before I got married, I said something about a friend of mine who had a home birth. And he was like, no grandchild of mine will ever be born outside the hospital.
Oh, that's a strong statement.
Yes. My dad is a very chill, phlegmatic kind of guy. He's not the type to ruffle feathers. So for him to say something like that, I mean, he really felt strongly about that. And my husband comes from a family where his mom had two home births. Her last two babies were born at home. And this was in the 80s. So she was like way, way, way ahead of her time.
Yeah.
All the midwives were underground back then. There was, you know. And then two of his sisters have had home births. One of his sisters actually got the law in Wyoming, which was at the time that she was pregnant, the law stated you could not, there were no home birth midwives were illegal and home birth was illegal. Mm. And she did not want to have to travel. They lived very far from the hospital. There were no birth centers. She didn't want to have to go that far. She'd only already had home births in another state. So she lobbied to get the law changed in Wyoming. So because of her, the law in Wyoming now is that you can get birth at home. So
that's a great claim to fame.
Yeah, I know. So Christian, my husband, is just like, home birth is very normal to him. He doesn't think it's, and there's a lot more skepticism and like, I guess, yeah, there's a little bit more skepticism about the medical world on his side of the family versus my side. And so that's what he was bringing to him, with him, to our marriage and to this conversation. And someone told me to watch the classic
Business of Being Born, perchance. Yes.
And I watched that and I was like, oh my gosh, okay, don't want to give birth in the hospital, that's for sure. But what about a birth center? Like, maybe a birth center would be a nice like middle ground. And I mentioned that to Christian and he was like, isn't that basically the same as giving birth at home, only you have to go to another place? And I was like, I think it is. He said, well, then why don't we just have the baby here? Like, it's not, there's no difference other than the location. And we were literally three blocks from the closest hospital. So that, which gave me a little bit of extra peace of mind. And it gave my parents some peace of mind too, I think. We finally told them, which was not fun, but I had.
And you did tell them. So much. Did you tell them before you had your baby then? So they knew while you were pregnant. Okay.
Yes. It would have been very, very difficult for me to keep that under wraps. We live in the same city. I saw them all the time. There was this constant questioning about when my first appointment with the OB was. And like my family, one thing I learned from this experience is that I didn't have great boundaries with my family. And it was very hard for me to keep anything from them, especially my parents. And so that was a life lesson. And they basically, like, after I laid out all the evidence and gave them all the statistics and all the everything, they were never, the question to them was never like, well, what if it's just so painful that you can't cope? They knew I could handle the pain. They were just concerned about safety. Mm-hmm. And so I you know, just gave them the best information I could give them. And I was like, I know you're probably never going to be comfortable with this, but this is what we're doing. And they also know me, that they know I'm not going to change my mind once I commit to something. So they didn't try to change my mind, which I was very thankful for. But every time I have had a baby, they're like, oh, we're so relieved. Because I think they're still afraid that something bad is going to happen. Even though I've had now 3 births at home with 0 complications, they're still like freaked out about it. So, you know, my dad even watched Why Not Home, which is even better, I think, than being born. It's a little bit more to date. And he watched that and he was like, okay, you know, I can see why, like, even medical professionals might want to have their babies at home, you know? Because he's a reasonable guy, but it's just emotionally, it's never going to sit well with him, I don't think. And that's okay. My siblings had various reactions to it. My brother, I'll never forget this. It's the funniest objection I've ever heard to home birth. He was like, aren't you worried about your house, like, having germs and those getting on the baby? And I was like, you mean the same house that you would be bringing the baby back to, like, a day or two after birth? Like, what's the problem here? Like, why is the microbiome of the hospital somehow superior to my lived-in house? Like, I don't understand that objection. It was so funny, though. Anyway, so I did have my first Joseph at home. It was a 12-hour start-to-finish labor, 2 hours of pushing. He needed a little help breathing when he was born, but other than that, it was a very uneventful birth. I had a doula, felt very supported. My husband was wonderful. I mean, it was just like, it really could not have gone better from that, like, just the technical standpoint. It was a really
great.
And I did a lot to prepare for it and prepare my body for it, prepare my mind for it. The hardest part for me was the unknown of, like, what is it going to be like? I've never given birth before. This is really scary. And my doula was so great about helping me and Christian kind of face those fears.
Good.
Talk about them very openly. And I prayed throughout my entire birth. I offered each contraction for someone who I wanted to pray for. My husband read me the names of the people. So
that's beautiful.
Going through the contractions. And that really helped too. My first, the real challenge came when I was trying to breastfeed. He was lots of oral restrictions. I think he had a lot of, he could have benefited greatly from body work, but at that time I didn't really know much about that. I didn't really do a lot of chiropractic care. I didn't know what cranial sacral therapy was. I didn't know how much ties and things like that, tightness in the body could impact feeding. So if you want to know kind of my story, you could just listen to Ella's story from the last birth story podcast that you did. Oral ties, which is crazy because he clearly did. And so we ended up doing combination feeding until he was about 10 months old. So he did get some formula. And, you know, I'm thankful that we were still able to breastfeed because he never prefer the bottle to the breast, which I think is just kind of he went on to breastfeed until he was 4 and a half, so we did not any issues past 10 months, you know. But that was one of the hardest things I've ever experienced, and it's still hard for me to even, like, think back to how hungry he must have been. I didn't know what was wrong at first. Like, it was just so much was new. And how frustrated he was at the breast, like, all these things that now I put together all the pieces and I completely understand what was going on. But at the time, I was just in new mom fog and just so devastated that I couldn't feed my baby the way that I wanted to and get him what he needed, you know? So that has given me a lot of empathy for women who struggle with breastfeeding. And it's funny because my husband assumed breastfeeding was going to be a breeze because it's natural and his mom didn't have breastfeeding issues. And some women just, it is a lot easier for them. Some women, it does come more naturally too. it was not for me. And I think it was both me and my baby that were struggling on different planes. But he was very humbled by the fact that it was really tough, really hard for me. And I think it taught him a little bit more empathy too for women who struggle. Yeah. And that was a gift in disguise for sure. I couldn't even think about having another baby until he was about 9 months old because I was so overwhelmed with just having, like, trying to care for him. Because he's also a very sensitive baby, very high needs, and did not sleep well. Oh, so many things. So I remember around 9 months, I was like, okay, I think I could maybe handle another baby. Like, not, I don't want to get pregnant right this minute, but I'm not, like, terrified of getting pregnant anymore, which I was before that. And we always planned on using natural family planning to, if we wanted to postpone or avoid pregnancy, we were going to use that. And I didn't end up having to because my fertility doesn't come back until I night wean my baby. So I started partially night weaning him around 13 months. And that's when I got my first cycle. But because of progesterone issues, I didn't end up having a fertile cycle until I got back on my supplements. And then I got pregnant with my second. And so they're about 2.5 years apart. And with him, I had a ton of prodromal labor with him, which I was not expecting because I didn't think that happened until you were like on your third or fourth baby, but it can happen when you're on your second baby.
Yeah.
Especially when your baby is huge and not in a good position. So I think a lot of that prodromal labor was just trying to get him to move.
Absolutely.
And it messed with my mind because my first was like early labor, active labor, first stage of labor. It was like one long, like linear progression. And this was like start, stop, start, stop, start, stop. Oh, you think you're in labor, but you're not. Midwife comes out to check you. Nope. Not happening. And it was very, very trying on me mentally. But once I finally got out of my head, thanks to my doula, she coached me through that. It really helped a lot. And he ended up, so I thought I was in labor the night before he came. And I had like 6 hours of what I thought was active labor. It was really early labor. And the midwife came out and the doula came out and I was laboring for 6 hours and then it just stopped. And I went to bed crying. So I told my family I was
worst.
Labor.
Yes.
And then went to bed at like 1 a.m. Totally forgot to text anybody and tell them I wasn't actually in labor. Got an earful from several family members the next day telling me that I scared them because I didn't update them. And how could I be considerate and tell them what was going on? And I'm like, I'm so sorry that at 1 a.m. I forgot to text after I had been laboring for 6 hours. Like, it was just, it was one of those times where it was very clear that my family of origin does not have the same understanding of birth as a natural physiological process as I do. Something that can start and stop. That doesn't just start and then go all the way to completion every time, because the only birth that they've experienced is in the hospital, where if it's not progressing, they're going to make sure that it does.
Exactly.
And so if I had been in the hospital, absolutely, I would have gotten some Pitocin and, you know, Nico would have been forced out before he was ready to come. So I was 40 and 6 the next day. I was scheduled to have a biophysical profile ultrasound to make sure if he was okay. And I went to labor that morning, like active labor. And I was like, oh, this is what labor is. Not what I was having last night. Like, this is real active labor. I had forgotten what it felt like to have a real active labor type contraction. And once I had one, I was like, oh, this is so different from last night. Okay, why did I think that was labor? I don't know. So I was just very excited. And anyway, long story short, 3 hours later, he was born. The midwife, because she was like kind of skeptical about whether or not I was really in labor, took her time and ended up getting there only 45 minutes before he was born. So
oh, my
I pushed
word.
For 20. first for 20 minutes. He was 10 pounds, 6 ounces, had a very short cord. So I had to like really be in the right position when I was laboring or else his heart rate went super low. And yeah, so I ended up both of those births. I wanted to have a water birth, but first time I couldn't get the water warm enough in our dinky little apartment. The second time the water wasn't full enough by the time he was born because it was so fast that it was too shallow for me to get comfortable and to really be able to labor in there. So both of them ended up being land births. And, but after Nico was born, that was the most amazing euphoria I've ever experienced in terms of relief. I felt so relieved because it was so intense. And and he nursed amazingly from the very first flash. Like it was
night and day
difference. And that was my biggest intention, was that he would nurse well, because I was so scared of having another experience like the first. And
I bet.
Lord was just so merciful.
Yeah.
Of just the easiest. He was the easiest newborn, easiest baby. He's 3 now, so he's not really easy anymore, but he'll get easy again, I'm sure. He's just a very easygoing type personality. And I'm very, very thankful for that birth, because it was really the postpartum time that was more redemptive than the birth. Because my mom came every day to help me. It was COVID lockdown. This was in 2020. But my parents were very like comfortable coming over and helping us out. And so I had a lot of help, but I also didn't have to entertain visitors I didn't want to see. You know, people were very like extra cautious around babies. I was like, this is great. I don't have to tell anybody. I don't want them to come over. They just won't come over at all because of the lockdown. And so, and my husband, who normally has lots of meetings outside the house and, you know, he works from home, but he was gone a lot just for meetings and stuff, was never gone. So I didn't realize what a luxury that was and how special that was until this postpartum, when it has not been like that at all. And now I have 3 kids. So yeah.
Yeah, I guess I had one little question, which was, if we could backtrack just a tiny bit, was there anything different about the choices you made for your second regarding like your pregnancy or your prenatal care than your first?
So my second, I had a different midwife because I moved and my other midwife was just way too far away. She came to me because she didn't have an office yet, which was like,
I know, it's really clutch, isn't it?
Amazing. I can't see you, but, so that was really nice. She was just such a gem, the kind of person that I felt like I could really share all of my concerns, all of my fears, everything that it was, because I was really nervous about adding another to our family and what it was going to be like for my oldest. And she sat there, she cried with me. She prayed with me. She's just such a delightful midwife. And, you know, she did all the other stuff too, but it was the emotional support that I needed the most, and that she gave me what I needed. And
it's beautiful.
She is also a mom of 3 and had just had her 3rd. So, when I connected with her, and then the midwife who took over for her during her maternity leave, during my pregnancy for my prenatals, ended up being my midwife for the 3rd birth. So anyway, she was just so, so wonderful. And she was just like, the Lord has provided the perfect support for me with every pregnancy. I had the same doula, and she was fantastic too. She was, again, more emotional support than anything else. She did not actually make it to the birth because she was attending another birth. She was in midwifery school at the time. And she was attending another birth like 2 hours away. So she came for the postpartum time, which was great. But I did a lot more PT and chiropractic care that time, because I was having all this hip pain and pelvic pain that I had never experienced before. And so I really availed myself of that kind of help more than I did my first pregnancy, because your first pregnancy, you're just like your body has not been through that before. So it's just, everything's a lot tighter. And I don't know, I did not have a lot of pain my first pregnancy. I was also younger, so there's that. But I was very thankful for those things, my second pregnancy. Because I really was, I would have been miserable pretty much if I hadn't had the PT, the pelvic floor PT. And I take care of pretty much every person. So yeah, that's what I made. And then I also was just very, like, very proactive about preparing my oldest for what it would be like to have a baby be born in our house.
So what did you do to prepare your son? What did that look like?
We're very into reading in our family, very into reading aloud. And so I got a book called My Mother is the Strongest.
I love that one.
Yeah. It's like, it's actually, it was meant to prepare the woman's kids for a free birth that she had. The midwife is in it, but it's really not mentioned. And that was the only home birth picture book that I knew of at the time. Since then I've added to my collection, but we read that over and over and over again, and he thought it was so funny that the baby was going to come down like my pelvis tunnel.
And, like, I love that too.
And I mean, it still was so hard for him to really, because he was 2.5. So, you know, the 2.5-year-old doesn't really know what. Oh, you're sweetie. Hey. Hey, it's okay. But I think it did help him. And then the birth ended up being during the day, so he was there. My husband was playing with him outside during the actual labor part, because I didn't feel as wonderful to have him there. But for me, the peace of mind knowing that my kid or my children are being taken care of by my husband, who is the one who knows them as well as I do, is that's more important to me, to be in peace, at peace during birth, than having him with me. So,
oh, sweetie. You're mad because I wasn't there.
So.
Okay. We also have a really active letdown, so he gets frustrated, but.
Oh, that's okay.
So anyway, anyway, so when the actual birth happened, he just, like, they came right before, right when baby was crowning.
Oh, that's.
Sorry. I'm like, I think he might just need to be settled.
No worries.
So they came in when he was crowning, and I was facing my son, so he didn't get the full view of the baby coming. I was kind of on hands and knees, which always is my, it's like my go-to labor position. It's my go-to birthing position. It's just what I feel most comfortable in when I'm in labor and delivering. So when I pushed him out completely, my husband caught him. And my son was just sitting across from me in a little rocking chair watching. And he was he seemed completely unfazed by the whole thing. He was, the only thing that he thought was funny is that he could see my bottom. He was like,
of course.
Like, that was what he commented on.
Yeah.
And all the midwife had all of her stuff on his little play table. Like, she had set up, you know, Chex pads and sanitary things and put all of that on his little play table, his chain table, and all of her equipment up there. And when she was ready to take it all off, she was using it, and the table was cleared again. he just went over and played on his table, like while I was getting stitched up, while I was getting, you know, all of my postpartum care, he was just playing. And it was like totally ordinary day for him. And that was, yeah, he was totally unfazed. You know, I think now he really wanted to be there for the third birth. He's 5 and a half now. But there was no way I was going to wake him up in the middle of the night for that, because he is not a, like, you can wake him up in the middle of the night and he'll be totally cool kind of kid. Like, he's he will make the house a miserable place to live if you wake him up in the middle of the night. So he was really bummed that he didn't get to see it, but hopefully we'll have another.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he just, to him, birth is a very normal thing. There's nothing like scary about it, which I just think is so beautiful. And I really wish I had been able to witness a birth like that when I was little, because I think it would have changed.
For sure.
Experience, my expectations for birth, everything.
This is not. I love you. Just a little bit longer, okay? I'm about to tell this story and we'll be back. The headphones weren't working. Boys, I need you to go back with Daddy, okay? Please close the door. Thank you.
So, yeah, I mean, I loved having him there. It was not distracting for me. But again, he was also being taken care of by my husband. And he wasn't interested in, like, coming and trying to get in the pool with me and stuff like that. Like, there was just, you know, he was totally fine just playing outside with Daddy until the baby came, you know? So
that worked out so nicely for you. That's pretty ideal.
It did.
I like it for was. Me too. Like really I like my kids to be somewhere else until I'm pushing, and then they can come in the room, and that feels about right to me. But it's cool how much he took it in stride, and even if he doesn't consciously remember that experience, I like to think that that imprint of like birth as normal and just another thing that happens in a family's life is like somehow imprinted on their little hearts and minds and their cellular memory, if you will, you know.
Well, there are pictures of him right next to Nico, like right after he was born, and, you know, where he's latching, like he's his first latch, and Joseph is just right there, like sitting next to me. And I mean, how many kids can say that they got to meet their little sibling minutes after they were born, or see their sibling before? That's just so unusual in our culture. And so I think that's special to him. Like, he likes that. He feels like that's a cool thing. And he got to help cut the cord too, which we always tell him that story. He loves. So he was really, there were some tears because he wasn't there for his third, his second little brother to be born. Because it was just, I think he was really, really sad. I kept saying, I'm probably going to give birth during the day, you know, which was silly. I don't know why I said that, because you never know.
Nope.
And of course, I ended up giving birth in the middle of the night. It was like my first real night birth. And he was justifiably disappointed. So we'll see. Hopefully we'll have
next time. Yeah. Well, that does take us up to this third birth.
That was incredible. Yeah. So I got pregnant with Luke, my third, he's really messy. What's wrong? Okay, you don't want a nurse. Got it. Okay. So my fertility does not come back for a long time. Until I nightwean, like I said, and I have to have like 6 hours reliably without nursing pretty much daily for a few months before my cycle comes back. And so this time it didn't come back until I was like 21 months postpartum.
Just tired.
So with Nico, I you know, I didn't nightwing him until he was almost two. I wasn't in a rush. And I knew that once I nightwing, my fertility would come back. And I really liked a bigger spread between my kids. For me, it really, I feel like it's what I need. And I'm thankful that my body seems to understand that too.
Yeah.
That if I'm not reliably sleeping through the night, that it's not a good time for me to get pregnant. And once I started night weaning him, my cycle started showing signs of returning. And then I started to work on my health in a new way, right before I got pregnant with my third, in the sense that I started learning about like kind of the pro-metabolic way of eating. And I started changing my diet to include a lot more protein, to include things that I had previously excluded because I thought they were bad for you, like milk, yes, and dairy products, and things like that. And I started eating more carbohydrates. And it was when I got pregnant with my third, it was my first symptom-free cycle I'd ever had, my first symptom-free luteal phase.
Awesome.
That I'd ever had since I started menstruating when I was like 13. So I was really sad that I had not discovered this sooner because even with progesterone supplements in the past, I'd always had really horrible PMS and just really painful cycles. And so it was such a huge blessing. I did gain a little bit of weight because I was kind of trying to do this quickly, like get my progesterone balance a little bit better faster. And that meant probably gaining a few more pounds than I would have if I'd gone about it slower. But
sure,
I still felt like I was sleeping better than I had ever slept. I was felt better than I'd ever felt. And then I got a positive pregnancy test. And it was just such a wonderful, wonderful moment. And I did have to switch to a different midwife because my midwife for my second birth had gotten an office and it was way too far away. I was devastated about that. But I got to see the midwife who was the assistant at my second son's birth. So I had a relationship with her already. And she's like on the crunchier side and very chill about declining anything you want to decline. So I basically declined almost everything, except for I asked her to do labs that she does not normally do because I wanted to just, I was just curious about like my, for example, I never had my labs checked. And so she checked them. It turned out that I was super hyperthyroid my first trimester. And I was having all these weird symptoms that could then be explained by the fact that I was hyperthyroid. I was having heart palpitations. I was super intolerant to heat, which is not a good thing when you're living in Texas in the summer. Having just terrible anxiety, really hard time sleeping. And I had just weaned myself off of Zoloft, which I had been on many years. So I was on Zoloft starting when I was 30, a very low dose. But still, I was taking it through both of my pregnancies, my previous pregnancies. But I really felt like by the time I got pregnant with my third, or before I got pregnant with my third, I was at a place in my life where I really felt like I didn't need it anymore.
Yeah.
And I wanted to wean myself off, and I did. And I felt great.
That's so great.
Then I got pregnant and I started having all these anxiety problems again. I was like, oh my gosh, is this because I went off of Zoloft? But then I found out I had a thyroid issue and that can happen to women in pregnancy.
Yes.
And so I got in with this like holistic thyroid clinic here in Austin. And I did end up getting on some medication after, because I was literally doing every single thing you could possibly do to support your thyroid. Already, supplements wise, nutrition wise, I was doing all the right things. And so medication was the next step. And that medication was a game changer for me. I started sleeping again. I was able to like go through my days without crying at the drop of a hat. Like it was a huge gift. And I'm so thankful I ordered those labs because Otherwise, I would have just thought I should go back on my Zoloft. And
right, you might have masked the real issue. Actually, yes. Had you gone on that, and you wouldn't have known.
My suspicion is that I've had thyroid issues for a long time, mm-hmm. but they've never been diagnosed because no doctor ever suggested that I get my thyroid checked. I don't think I've ever had thyroid labs done. And I've been to endocrinologists, I've been to OBs and complained about all these symptoms. And the only offerings I was ever given was either go on the pill, take an antidepressant. That's it. other testing. And so I'm really, really thankful that I discovered this problem that I was having. I continue to get tested throughout pregnancy. The medication was truly life-changing for me. And then I got my postpartum labs back, and it still kind of looks like I might have some postpartum thyroiditis.
Sure.
Hoping that it's not actually Hashimoto's, but anyway, we'll see. But I'm just so thankful to know this now and to actually be able to like do something to support it, you know?
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up because I think anyway, that's something that happens that really, really commonly, and people don't realize how common that is.
Yes.
Are you familiar with Aviva Ram? She's a holistic doctor who used to be a midwife. She has some really great resources on thyroid and pregnancy. So I might link to those in the show notes in case there's anyone listening to this who's listening to you and thinking, oh my word, that sounds like me. I wonder if I might have that going on. It's definitely worth looking into because it is way more common than you might think.
Yes. And the weird part was that I had both hyperthyroid and hypothyroid symptoms at the same time. And that was, hypothyroid markers as well as hyperthyroid symptoms. So very strange. And that's why I'm so thankful that I was working with a practitioner because my midwife was just out of her scope to really address those things. So other than that, his pregnancy, the other big problem in the pregnancy is I kept getting these stomach bugs that my kids got. And I got 3 stomach bugs in this pregnancy, which I just cannot believe I had that many stomach viruses in one pregnancy. It's miserable to be pregnant with a stomach bug. And I think it was because my immune system was suppressed or my immune system was different that I kept catching. But also, stomach bugs apparently, because they go through your system so quickly, it's really hard to build up antibodies to them, which is why kids tend to catch them so frequently or so easily. Anyway, I learned a lot about stomach bugs. That was a real cross of this pregnancy for sure.
Yeah.
But everything else with the baby was fine. I was very thankful for that. We found out we were having another boy, and I did go through a little bit of just disappointment that it wasn't a girl because I've always wanted a daughter and I'm 39. I'm not getting younger. So my chances are, you know, I'm running out of chances to have one, but I am so thankful to be a boy mom. I still can't believe I'm actually a mom and that I'm actually married. So it's just like, I feel just like it's sort of, I'm living in this dream life. That's not easy at all and not at all dreamy in many ways, but like still is a dream.
Yes.
In the best sense. So anyway, his birth ended up being my most beautiful, most peaceful, easiest. Like if that's the birth I have to end on, I ended on a high note because I really don't know how it could have gone better. The only thing I would have changed is that my voice could have been there for it because it was just so blissful. But, this time I did still had prodromal labor, but I was prepared for it. Mm. And it was I never was tricked by it this time. Like, I'm having contractions. Okay, great. You're doing some work for me that I won't have to do later. That's kind of how I looked at it this time. And I actually started having the prodromal labor, I think at 39 and 2, I wrote it down, 39 and 3. And I was having loose stools too. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. But I just kept telling myself, that's interesting, but it's not labor. Don't tell yourself it's labor because you're going to get psyched out. And I mean, I am so used to going late. My first was 41 and 5, second 40 and 6. So I was like, this baby's not coming anytime soon. Everyone kept telling me, oh, you never know. And I'm like, no, my babies do not come early. They just don't. So I'm not going to get into my head and think that this baby may be the one who comes early because he's not going to be. And I'm really glad I thought that way because it saved me a lot of agony and angst. I had contractions all day, a couple of days, like leading up to the birth, but nothing. I was more uncomfortable by the day, but that doesn't mean anything. I actually watched your video of like signs that you might be in labor. Like you're so focused on labor when you get to that point in birth or in pregnancy that like even if you've had two babies already, you'll still watch a video about like how you know you're really
so labor. True.
It's so funny. And then I also did your little like free level up your home birth.
Oh yeah, Faith-filled home birth workshop. Yeah.
Yes. And I loved that. And it made me realize, I was like, wow, I have given my midwife way too much power. And I need, not that she was like lording it over me, but I needed to take more responsibility like next time, because it was too late at that point for me to do any research and like really get up to speed on, you know, resuscitating a newborn and stuff like that. But if God blesses us with another, I'm absolutely going to do that because I want to be capable of caring for my baby if the midwife doesn't get there in time or something like that. Like, I don't want to feel like I'm powerless and this is not my birth, you know, in that sense. I felt like my midwife was super hands-off and very much trusted me, but I still felt like I depended on her a lot for that, you know, more than I want to in the future. So that was one of the things I really
interesting
from that course, which I really recommend to anyone who is interested in having home birth. So I did lose my mucus plug like 4 days before he was born. I started to lose it again. That can come back. So I was not getting excited, but I noted it. And I kept being like, every night I'd go to bed being like, well, at least I'm not going to have a baby at night because I'm not in labor yet. And I don't want to have a night birth. I'm not a night person. I want to have a day birth, blah, 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 blah. And of course, I ended up going to labor at night. The night of the 21st of March, I had contractions off and on all day. Nothing new about that. But then I went to bed. Boys were asleep. Christian was asleep. I was still awake. And I had a really intense contraction. I was like, oh, that's different. That's not, that is not the same. And I said, okay, but that could still be nothing. So I'm just going to stay in bed and see if it happens again. It happened again. Like 7 minutes later. It's like, okay, I'm going to just leave the room and go turn on some music and pray. We have a little prayer room that has like an altar and our Bible and some, you know, like a crucifix and everything. And so I had some Matt Maher on that I had been listening to for a while that Lent and had just really been speaking to me. And so I was like laboring, but I was having to get on my hands and knees. These were not unbearable, but they were very intense. And I was like, okay, this is not early labor. So I went to the bathroom and then I kept having to go to the bathroom. And every time I went to the bathroom, it was a bloody show. So I texted my midwife. I was like, bloody show, loose stools, intense contractions. I think you need to come. She was like, okay. So she got there. That was at like, let's see, I made a timeline. That was at 10 o'clock that I texted my midwife. She got there by 11. And I had just been working through the contractions on my hands and knees. I had 5 to 7 minutes between each one. And in the interim, I would just get up and go like prepare for the midwife to get there. It was amazing. Like I had zero It was so weird. I was like, why do I feel so good if I am this far advanced in labor? Because I was pretty sure that this is going to happen quickly. Yeah. But I was like, why do I feel so good still? And I was able to get like everything ready before the midwife got there, just in between contractions, plus going to the bathroom. After
did you even wake your husband up? Or did you let him sleep?
I woke him up at 12:30.
Oh, so he didn't wake up for a while, though. You were just kind of doing your thing.
I was just on my own. Yeah, I wasn't in labor land. I was very, very present the whole time. And it was the first time I've ever wanted to listen to music during labor and actually, like, enjoyed listening to music. It was such a prayerful experience. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I called my doula I texted my doula. She was in another birth and she had another birth after that she was slated to be at. So she was going to send her assistant. And I was like, you know what? I don't even need her. I don't want anybody else here. My midwife is coming. Christian is here. Jesus is here. I don't really need anything else. Like, I don't know why I even hired a doula this time. I think because I thought I was going to need her like I had in the past, but
yeah,
come to find out, don't need a doula anymore. And so that was kind of a bummer because we spent a lot of money. But anyway, so my midwife got there. She started setting up the birth pool or filling it up. And I was like, just let me know when I can get in. I feel like I'm ready to get in, you know, whenever. And around 12:30, I got into the birth pool. I woke up Christian, got into the pool, and he and I just hung out there for another hour until I started feeling pushy. But like, seriously, so peaceful, so restful. Aww. I had 5 to 7 minutes between every single contraction. I never felt like it. I know. That was the weirdest part. They never got closer together.
Interesting.
And my midwife was like, how far along is she? Like she was starting to get nervous that this was going to be a really long labor because I was not acting like I was really close to transition. So an hour after I got in the pool, I was like, I'm feeling pushy. And since with my first, I had a cervical prolapse, like my cervix was literally coming down. Oh. With the baby, when I like my boob was coming down when I was pushing, I was like, can you just check to make sure that there's no cervix there, that I'm not going to be pushing on the cervix? And she was like, oh, yeah, no, there's nothing there. Go ahead. And amazing. So I just pushed with every contraction after that. Extremely relieving to push. The only part that I would describe as painful was when he crowned. And then I pushed his body out and it was like the most peaceful. And I remember distinctly what song was playing because I had switched over to these Benedictine nuns who sing like a cappella kind of chant style songs. And they have a Lent album and they were singing All Glory, Laud and Honor, which is this traditional hymn sung on Palm Sunday. And it was the most just like perfect, beautiful moment. My husband helped catch him, but I was really the one who caught him, which is my first experience of that, plus first experience of a water birth, which was so nice. And I'm like, I will never push outside the water if I can help it. Because man, that makes it so much easier. And his cord was wrapped around his neck a couple times, just took that off. He pooped as soon as he was born, but there was no meconium in the waters. So my waters always break like right before the baby's born. So my water broke as I was pushing his head out. And he was just completely fine. Aww. Everything looked good. I thought he was like 8 pounds. Turns out he was 10 pounds. But to me, he looked tiny. So yeah. And the one thing that we did differently, so in the past, I didn't mention this before. The one complication I did have after my first birth was a postpartum hemorrhage. Mm. And it was a little bit, like, it was a pretty intense one. Not to where I needed a blood transfusion or anything like that. No transfer was needed, but I got really woozy and definitely was like extremely weak for several days after that. And second time, I again bled quite a bit and was not able to get up and like go to the bathroom and stuff like that on my own right after birth. Like I needed a lot of assistance. Basically had to stay in bed for the first, like literally stay like laying down for the first 24 hours, because anytime I got up, my blood pressure would just dip completely. Like it would just drop. And so, my body did not respond well to that bleeding. And my placenta, unlike your placentas, my placenta comes like 5 minutes after my baby's born.
Sounds nice.
That's happened every time. So this time we decided to go with expectant management or active management, where I got a shot of Pitocin immediately after I gave him birth to him. Basically, like as soon as I stood up, well, right after I gave birth to him, I stood up. You know, like after we had our moment to look at him and everything, I stood up, separation gush, like less than 5 minutes after the baby was born.
Wow.
So then immediately they put the Pitocin in my leg, and then I did not have any, like my bleeding was totally normal this time.
Good.
I was able to go to the bathroom on my own after birth for the first time, which was so wonderful. And I attribute it not only to the active management, but I also think that the nutrition changes I made during pregnancy.
I was going to say that.
Yeah. Like I ate a lot of liver.
Mm-hmm.
I ate a lot of liver. I was very conscious of my copper levels. Never had done that before. Like my hemoglobin has always been good. Like every time I've had my hemoglobin measured at the end of pregnancy, it's always been in the normal range. But for some reason, I was still losing an excessive amount of blood postpartum. And so I think nutrition changes plus the Pitocin right away really helped a lot. And then I just went to the bedroom. We went to our guest room because we bench share with our other two boys. Well, I don't right now because I'm with the newborn, but on a different surface. But we were bed sharing all together, and I did not want to wake the boys up. The postpartum stuff, even though we had a separate mattress set up for me. So we went to the guest room and did all the postpartum stuff there and the newborn exam and all that. And I delivered my placenta with no issues, but I just could not believe how much better I felt after that birth.
Oh, amen.
In terms of just like strong, capable, like not weak and just woozy. And, you know, I still felt like I had just given birth to a 10-pound baby, but it was not like an overwhelming exhaustion.
Yeah.
So I was just totally on the birth high, did not sleep that whole night. We introduced the baby to the boys in the morning, and it was, but it was just like truly a blissful birth experience. And I'm so grateful. The only regret I have is that we didn't have like a birth photographer or a videographer or something, because we really couldn't afford it. But if we hadn't paid for my doula, we probably could have. That's a different story.
Hindsight.
Yeah, hindsight. But the assistant midwife did get a video of me right after he crowned, pushing him out completely, and meeting him for the first time.
Oh, beautiful!
Watch that without crying, it's the most beautiful video. Oh. I'm very protective about who I show it to. Because, you know, some people just are very weird about birth, including women who just feel really uncomfortable with anything that's not really hospital, you know, like what they're used to, basically. And so, but it just, every time I watch it, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was the best. That was just such a beautiful moment. And he latched fine, even though he does have a little bit of a tongue tie and a lip tie, but he's not had the struggles that my first had by any means. And, you know, the first couple of weeks were a challenge because I did not get the 2 weeks in bed that I really wanted, because my husband can only take 1 week off of work. So I got 1 week in bed, which I'm very thankful for. The second week, I had to not get back to normal. I still laid down a lot, but my husband couldn't watch the boys full time. And then my good friends, all my best friends who live here, have really young kids and mm-hmm. or pregnant or are postpartum themselves. So it's like,
yeah,
I've just not had as much support this time around. And I did not realize how much more help I was going to need with the other two boys this time around than I didn't realize how much I would need, because I've never had three kids before, but it's like, right. I need another pair of arms. And we are slowly getting our rhythm. But I feel like when those first few weeks when my body was still so tender and my emotions were still so tender and everything was still evening out, it was extremely challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some really hard moments, and both Christian and I were both like, okay, next time we're taking the money that we would use on a doula and we're using that to plan for postpartum help, because that's what we really need. And we're not going to, like, I just thought we did not plan as well as we could have for postpartum, mostly because we just didn't know what we were going to need and how hard it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think maybe it was a blog post of yours where you were talking about how you didn't plan very well for your fourth, because you were kind of like, oh, what's one more? We can do three, we can do four. And I think that's kind of the attitude.
Yep.
And, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. No, it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's not.
Extra childcare help in there, and it's been wonderful when we've had it. But there's just nothing quite like having three kids who are not, none of them are really at an age that is helpful yet. Like my 5.5-year-old is sort of helpful, but not really. And like, he still can't pick up the baby, you know, safely. And my 3-year-old very much still needs me. Like, he's still a little mm-hmm. little guy. And so it's just been a really huge adjustment. I think that, like, the birth was just the Lord kind of giving me this beautiful, like, kiss on the forehead and telling me how much he loves me and that I'm his beloved daughter and he wants me to have this beautiful experience. And the postpartum has just been a reminder of, like, yeah, you need me more than you could possibly know.
Mm.
And I want you to know how seen and loved you are, because he has provided us with help in ways that we weren't expecting, even though it has been really, really challenging. So yeah, I'm just like, I'm still in all of that birth. I wish every woman could have one like that. Like, I want that for my sisters who've only ever had hospital births, or who, you know, one of my sisters has some significant birth trauma from her first. And has since only done epidurals because she's just afraid of having kind of a repeat of that first experience. And I just wish I could, like, bottle it up and give it to every woman, because it was so beautiful. And it, I mean, again, I did prepare a lot and I did a lot of work on myself, you know. There was a lot that went into it, but at the end of the day, it was still like grace, because I've had three very, very different births and I've prepared really well for all three of them. But this one just happened to be like, it was just like the sweet spot. I don't know how else to describe it. So yeah, I'm just extremely grateful. That was the overwhelming sentiment I had after my first birth was exhaustion. My second was relief, and my third was just gratitude. And we named him Luke because it's my favorite gospel, and it's the name that kept coming to me in prayer. And Gabriel is his middle name because he was born, his due date was St. Patrick's Day. So if he was born on St. Patrick's Day, which would have been a miracle if he was born on his due date, he was going to be Luke Patrick. But He was born 3 days before the 25th of March, which is, in the Catholic world, the Annunciation, celebration of Mary finding out that she was going to have Jesus, which is 9 months before Christmas. So that if he had been born on the Annunciation, we definitely would have named him Gabriel, but it's close enough. So we decided to stick with that as the middle name. And
I love my
my middle son is Nicholas Raphael. So I've got two archangels. I just need a Michael. So if I have another boy, Michael will feature somewhere in his name. So all three of the archangels.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. That's my year.
You almost seem like you're still riding the high a little bit, even 9 weeks later. Like, just that the medicine that birth was to your soul. Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah. Like, the listeners can't see you, but you like glow when you talk about it.
I would like to with me. Well, it's, you know, the hardest part is not being able to share it with people like my family of origin. You know, I shared the birth video with one of my sisters who I knew would love it and appreciate it. But I knew I couldn't show them because they would feel really uncomfortable. Their experience of it would be, why is the cord wrapped around his neck? Why aren't they doing anything? Like, oh, that's so dangerous. That's one of the griefs, I think, that came along with the joy of the birth was just like, there's only certain people I can share this with.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not necessarily the people you would guess that I could share this with, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm thankful to have some really dear friends who are home birthing moms themselves, or who are very like comfortable with the idea, even if it's not for them. And then I have, you know I have people in my life who think I am completely nutso. They would never say it to my face, but that's okay. I've accepted that.
Well, here on the Holy Wild Birth podcast, you are not a nutso lady. You are right at home here.
I mean, so. I'm like pretty tame. I didn't have a free birth, so I feel like I'm not even very hardcore. But your podcast was one of the ones that I listened to the most, especially toward the end. And I listened to your induction episode. Because I was like tempted to try something.
Aren't we all? We all are. Yeah.
He was my earliest at 40 and 5. And when I tell people that, they're like, what? Because so rarely do hospital births happen post dates these days.
Right.
So I think so many people are like, how in the world would your doctor let you go that long? Then they find out I have a home birth and then they're like, deer in the headlights.
Yes.
So I was very thankful for your podcast because I was so encouraged by the birth stories and also just by your experience, your wisdom, yours. And I'm totally blanking on my wife's name right now. Yeah. And Lauren. Yes. And that induction episode was like super convicting for me because I really felt like the Lord was asking me to really just trust him. Because with my second, I did get a membrane sweep, which did literally nothing, but it made me uncomfortable. And it was also me really trying to force it. Like I was trying to make it happen because I really wanted it to happen. And the Lord was just very gentle with me this time. And every time I thought about doing something that might induce labor, he was like, no, that's not for you. I'm glad I listened because, he had something much better in store for me.
Truly, what a gift. What a gift.
Yes.
It's a really lovely story. The overarching theme of all of your stories is really so lovely, like such a testament to God. I'm just struck by you're tempted to induce and how that mirrors you were waiting so long to get married. It's probably so often tempted to induce marriage too, if one could, right? And like how in both cases, he's shown you that you can wait for and waiting for it will be worth it. He will have something better for you than you could have planned yourself by your own effort.
Oh, and how many times I doubted that there was anything. I went back to these relationships that were dead because this is as good as it gets. I can't find anything better.
Yeah.
And the Lord always shut those doors, whether or not I wanted them shut. And I'm so thankful for that because I could have gotten myself into some really horrible marriages if I had had my way, you know?
Yeah. Oh, me too.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, he is merciful. He is so merciful.
Amen. That's so true. Thank you, Christina, for the gift of your stories. Appreciate you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me on and letting me share. It's just, this is like the only podcast I feel like I could really, I don't know. It feels like the safest place podcast-wise, birth podcast-wise, to share my stories. Even though there are other really wonderful birth podcasts and home birth podcasts, it's just, I love the commitment that you and Lauren have to just completely unabashed, Jesus loving, Jesus trusting approach to birth. And that's just not, you don't see that all the time. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. And would you mind telling our listeners where they can find you, like on Instagram and such?
I go off and on Instagram for like months at a time because it just, I have to discern all the time, like, is this really good for me or not?
But that is so understandable and healthy.
I'm on it right now. My handle is Crunchy Catholic.
I love it.
Which is just, I'm like, every once in a while I think about changing and I'm like, no, you know what? The more I comment on things with that handle that aren't Catholic or aren't Christian, the more people are like, oh, so there are some people who are like religious, quote unquote, who, you know, care about this stuff. Like I want to kind of surprise people sometimes. So anyway, and then I'm also a co-host on homeschooling, parenting kind of podcast with my friend Bonnie called Make Joy Normal. And we're on hiatus right now, but it's a great podcast. If you want to learn from a woman's wisdom, Bonnie, not mine, I mostly just ask questions and then listen to her, and take her advice. But
she is
a mom of seven, podcasting mom for seven. Yes, it is a very sweet. And she, almost all of her kids are grown, so she just has so much perspective. And I've learned a ton from her about, mostly about like parenting, because I'm not really homeschooling just yet. So, but she's given me a lot to chew on about homeschooling too. So,
it's great. It's a great podcast. So, it's called Make Joy Normal.
Make Joy Normal, yes. And that's her mission in life.
That's such a great, great mission.
Yes.
Great. So we'll link to both your Instagram account and that podcast in the show notes too. Any closing words, or would you be willing to pray us out from this episode?
I would love to pray us out.
Thank you.
Lord Jesus, we thank you so much for this time to explore and to reminisce about the mercy and the goodness that you have shown me in my births and in my time as a mother. I ask that you would, if any woman listening who is feeling discouraged or fearful or apprehensive about her pregnancy or birth, that you would give her peace and that she would know that she's not alone. You are her good, good father, and that you know exactly what she needs better than she does. I ask that you would bless all of those who are still afraid of birth, who still have misconceptions about physiologic birth and what it means, especially those in our own families who we struggle with on that level. that you would give us patience and empathy, and that you would open up opportunities for conversations with those people in our life. That you would bless Brooke and Lauren and their work on this podcast. In your name we pray.
Amen. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Holy Wild Birth. We hope that you were genuinely encouraged, inspired, and challenged by what you heard today. If you're loving what you hear, please make sure that you share it. Leave reviews. That helps other mamas find this content as well. And don't forget to read the show notes, okay? Because that's where you can find our email address if you want to reach out to us and start a conversation. It's also where you'll find free offerings as well as invitations to work with me and or Lauren. We can't wait to get to know you. See you next week.